Raspberry. That is Prince classic stuff, 1987. You're hearing it here on The Brew. Let's whiz off to Melbs and say hi to Morris Misolowski. What's cooking? How are you?
Yeah, hello. Happy Tuesday. And great to have you back. I missed you.
Oh, I'm sure you didn't. Anyway, I thought, well, how do we start? Because we tend to have a bit of a thread in what we do. And I'm thinking to myself, well, where does Morris get his ideas from? His bathroom wall post-it notes. I must talk about this, that or the other. And I know how you work. Sort of in a couple of months' time, there'll be a sort of Wagnerian article on your website as a result of this. So I thought I'd just be nosy today and ask you where you're likely to be going. What are you writing on the back of fake cigarette packets and post-it notes?
I love that you're being nosy, so let's have a look. I really don't have a common thread at all.
Right, Morris Misolowski, thank you very much. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you're welcome. Welcome. I mean, I'm eclectic. I read far and wide, and the silly thing is I actually don't read much at all. I don't read novels. I do read novels for pleasure, but I don't read books. Mm. I don't like management stuff. I tend to read a lot of articles, and I tend to have a lot of articles come into me. Mm. One of the joys of what I do and done it for so long. And like you, Phil, you know, you get your media releases, you get lots of people that send you stuff. Mm. I'm really lucky that people send me stuff and I get to read it.
It gets you going, right?
And I'm really curious. I mean, that's the bottom line for me. I'm really curious in everything. Nothing seems stale or not worth reading. And I'll read fashion magazines and I'll read management magazines and read kids magazines and have all kinds of conversations, all kinds of places. Mm. Because all of it's just wonderful. It just comes in handy and you never know where and when.
It's interesting, you know, because we've been doing this for a good few years since our days on Radio Australia together.
God, that was a while ago.
It was indeed. And I'm thinking, well,
I think I had hair in those days.
I think you might have. You would talk about, things have changed, you would talk about actual inventions and developments, but yeah. I'm sure you've noticed that more and more you're talking about trends and more subtle things now.
Yeah.
Is that my imagination?
No, you're right, because I'm allowed to talk more about that kind of stuff now. Not that I wasn't allowed then, but I mean generally in society, because talking about, you know, kind of warm, feely, fuzzy stuff, things that might be, really only 5, 6, maybe 10 years ago, for sure, nobody really wanted to hear except for me and my mates. You know, all they wanted to hear about was tell me the inventions, you know, show me the nice boxes, you know, the things that go up and down, whatever it is. All I want to talk about is the stuff. And increasingly, people now are more interested behind the scenes. They really want to hear about something that may not be, that may never be, but some scientist is doing. Maybe somebody said something. There's this cultural shift. There's a new flavor of ice cream. That's not being silly, but that's being purposeful. You know, something's becoming useful. I do a lot around, you know, what are new menus in restaurants as I travel. All of those things are just such interesting points.
Well, it is futurism, isn't it?
A conversation.
I mean,
it is, because I'm trying to figure out, as we always talk about, what's happening, what's different tomorrow than it was yesterday? Where are people headed? What's of interest to them? What are the new technologies? How far will this AI thing push? How far will health go? Will we age well? What will our houses look like? What will we be driving? All of those things are really, really important questions. And you, I, and the listeners are making decisions based on what we think the answer to that is every moment of our life. Will I go for a cup of coffee? Means I'm looking out the window, I'm thinking about, is it going to rain? Well, that's a future forecast.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think AI has disrupted business futurists?
Oh, absolutely.
You can't talk about the wheel anymore, can you? It's like, oh, AI is doing this and that.
Yeah, well, it's all AI. But then again, you and I have been all social media. We've been all internet. We've been all everything, meaning that we talked about these things before they became a really big thing, and all of a sudden that's all you could talk about for a little while.
Yeah.
But again, AI at the moment, I think, is going the same way. It's going even faster than social media, internet, PCs, mobile phones, meaning that people got so hot and excited about it. Everybody talked about it. Everybody knew everything about it. And all of a sudden they got really, really bored and it went quiet for a while.
Yeah.
And it goes into what's called, in our words, a disillusionment trough.
Okay.
In other words, we so overhyped it. We thought it was going to be so much more than it is at this moment, because it could never be that good. I mean, that's imaginative stuff talking. And we just kind of said, well, you know, I'm over it. I just want a breather. And we come back to it 6, 12 months later.
Yeah.
AI, to me, is beginning to feel like that. Everybody's been so excited for the last 2 years and dreaming up all these incredible things that it will do. Now to find, yeah, it might one day, but it's not doing it yet. And I'm sick of saying it over and over again. Not me, but everybody else. Sick of saying about it. Sick of thinking. I'm going back to my life now, and I'll let it catch up to me later on.
Yeah, you know, something made me laugh, because it did strike me that we do, everybody does talk about AI quite a lot. But there's one thing, you know, very often in the past we've talked about speculative fiction, especially from the, like, Edwardian era, Jules Verne and people like that.
Yeah.
People wanted a computer that they could just be like Hal, and they could say, can you do this for me, and blah, 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 random questions, and it goes, yes, I can. I mean, that's happened.
And yes, we do. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I've spent the last, before you and I started chatting just now, I spent the last half an hour, and I realized that for half an hour I have not touched my keyboard, but I have been writing up notes and doing all kinds of things, and that's because I'm now talking to this damn AI thing. I'm giving it notes and it's talking back to me, and I realized it because I went back to my keyboard. I'd actually turned it off. It wasn't on. And it's been a good half hour.
You know, I'm talking about things like Susie from Kronos, all the stuff you're going to know, like the brain from Billion Dollar Brain, and Alfie from Barbarella. You know, people could just say anything to these guys, and they're like, I'm sorry, Hal, I can't do that, Dave.
Yeah, but my favorite is always Rosie from the Jetsons.
Yeah.
She's always been my pin-up girl.
So we wanted a computer that we could talk to like I'm talking to Morris, and I think it's happened, actually.
Yeah, it has. It absolutely has. And the scary part is that it has happened, and now we have to come to terms with it. But the great part is it's happened, and we have to come to terms with it. It is, like always, a double-edged sword. There's so much that we have to understand about it. The last couple of weeks have been interesting around it, too. Maybe it's, you know, things gravitate into your space. But interesting because again, start a whole lot of education conversations.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, people want to talk about its impact in education.
I suppose so.
In a big way, and figure out what is education's purpose in this new world. I'm giving a series of conversations next week and workshops around it.
Have you decided yet, or do you kind of come to conclusions as you're speaking to these people?
No, I don't do either. It's not for me to decide not to come to a conclusion. It's really for me to provoke, and I mean that, and I always do it in the workshop. I'll give my opinions. I don't sit on the fence at all. You know me well enough.
Yeah.
I'll certainly say what I think, but I'm also really careful to say that it's not about, you know, it's not about predicting, it's about preparing. Here's some of the stuff that we know. Here's the likely ripple effects, as I call them. Here's what it might do, the wash up of those ripple effects might be. But this isn't a one-stop shop. It's going to continue on. But for me, in this education space, we really do need to understand that one of the great purposes of education, and especially the way that we monitored whether education was working, was by assessing memory. Yeah. Really, most of our results that kids got at school was memory.
And that makes it all sound like, why did we bother?
Yeah, and honestly, if you didn't have a good memory, which is what most kids don't, and that's not a negative, it just is how much can you keep in your poor little head, then you didn't do well in exams. But that didn't mean for a moment that you weren't clever. It didn't mean that you weren't wise. It didn't mean that you couldn't do things you wouldn't achieve in life.
They couldn't handle you, though, actually.
Yeah,
as well.
It just meant for that horrible piece of paper, for that exam, for the assessment, which is how they measured everything and how everything in the classroom was built and delivered, you didn't fit the system. And now not so much the case, because what we have is something that remembers for us. Now, that's not necessarily good, and yes, listeners should be screaming, and I'm one of them, but it does have some merits. I don't remember a phone number anymore, Phil. I know that's terrible, but I gave that up 10 years ago when the mobile phone did it so much better. I'm not even good at addresses anymore, because all I have to do is say I'm going to my sister's house or somebody else's and plug in that name, and it tells me how to get there.
Well, you could say, do you need to remember these things? I think we all agree, well, no.
Well, perhaps we don't need to as much as we once did, and perhaps there's other things that we can remember instead. And that's one of my journeys with education. You know, Melbourne University here, which is not one of my clients, but Melbourne University here in the paper last week made a really interesting comment, and this wasn't across the board, but it was for one of the faculties, and they've said already that now they have two sorts of papers, two sorts of exams. 80% of the work that students hand in, this is tertiary, so this is university level, 80% of this particular faculty, the work they hand in is allowed to be used with AI, but the students have to state AI assisted and show how. In other words, it's not testing memory, it's testing application. You know, prove to me that you can actually think. Not that AI can think. You can use AI to assemble all the bits and pieces, but then you have to prove that you actually have used that meaningfully and made sense of it. Now, to me, when I started, you know, the deep, dark days, nobody will even know what this is. Do you remember the old microfiche in libraries?
Yeah.
where you had to go in and there was index cards. Mm-hmm. There was this big, big locker type thing. And you went into the library and there were index cards, and the index card told you about the topic and what books might be on it. And then if you were lucky, there was something in the microfiche. To me, this is the equivalent, just much, much easier.
Yeah. And you're quite right, Maurice. You brought it home to a lot of us listening to you now, I think. I mean, exams, if you think about it, why did we do it? It was just a memory test. And most of us were rubbish. The talented ones probably with photographing.
Oh, well, wonderful. Wonderful. And it, of course, it's more because it was application. I accept that. But you had to, the only way you could apply it, in other words, write the essay or do the critique, was to remember it. If you couldn't even remember it, then applying it and critiquing it just didn't work for you. And your papers were only going to ever be mediocre. It doesn't represent you. It represents your ability to remember, which again is only a small part. So off track, but on track.
Yeah.
One of the things lately has been around education. There seems to be this big conversation, which I'm thrilled about. It won't come to an answer. And I know next week's institutions, and I've already said that, and I'll say that when I get up on stage with him. I know that it's not something that we talk about and they can do immediately. Mm. There's a system, there's all these things which are really difficult to move, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try.
And it doesn't mean it doesn't make sense, because it does seem to make sense, actually. So basically, my idea today was just to... Okay, see, I'm not the elite who's on Maurice's LinkedIn. I don't even have one myself. But I know you write some of your ideas, some of your thoughts, smaller articles on there, and that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, the kind of thing that will end up being published somewhere later.
Yeah. So on LinkedIn, I publish nearly every day, and usually they're smaller pieces, and I do two or three newsletters, which are long op-ed pieces, 3,000 words plus every week. So if you want to join me on LinkedIn, please do, guys. I mean, happy to have you on board. Often they're triggered, or mostly they're triggered by an article or a conversation. Yeah. So I do a mixture. I always try and find an article. So this week I wrote what I think is a fascinating article, not my article, but the topic. Yeah. And the topic was... It was the first pregnancy humanoid robot.
Okay.
It's a Chinese robot which is now in prototype that will supposedly be able to carry a baby through gestation. Where a mother can't.
You know, in the life of Brian, he says, where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box? Well, yes, basically.
Well, yes is the answer. And this is from a university again. We're not going to go out. It's not going to happen tomorrow. I accept all that. But it's fascinating for me to think that there are scientists out there who are tackling this inability for women to have a baby. And we're talking about carrying the baby.
Yeah.
And now saying, well, a robot might be able to do it. And this thing, this technology, again, it's a long
crazy,
way from being prototype. It's $21,000 Australian in its prototype form. You can't buy it, you can't use it, but the prototype they have is a relatively inexpensive thing, and it's attached, it's a robot that's attached to AI, it's attached to all kinds of things which help to monitor and grow the baby. I'm not concerned about this piece of machinery, but the thinking that brings us to this space and what it would open up if it was even remotely possible, to me made a really fascinating long op-ed article.
And hands up, who's gone all Jetsons about this? You know, it goes shopping and the baby's inside and da-da. No.
Yeah.
No. Something got me thinking about this as well. This is interesting how people get from a certain thought to an idea and da-da-da. Exactly what I did this morning, because I opened Maurice's website that I often like to have a look at and see what's cooking. You've done it up. You've tarted it up a bit. And that sort of got me
thinking. It's completely changed. It's brand new.
Yeah. I don't know why, but that sort of sent me down this wormhole. Why did you do it? Just for fun or...?
The old website was old. I mean, old website was old. It's 5 years old. Yeah. It had to be changed over. So I've updated it. It's got a lot more AI in it, written, you know, in with an AI sense. It's got all kinds of new tweaks and things. And I'm kind of feeling a bit fresher lately. So I thought that I would freshen it up too, and definitely pushing back into the world a bit more.
You know something? There you go. There's a germ of an idea for me. Is the website, as we know it, the website per se, still the best way to advertise your wares?
No.
Well, there you go. See,
what the website? Yeah, it's not. But what the website is and what it's been for, I think, the last 10 years, it's the only thing that you control online. Everything else is controlled by some other company.
That's true.
So for me, it's my single source of truth that regardless, like now I've transferred everything from, literally this is about 10 websites old, all into this. The blog goes back to 2005. I control it. I'm not saying anything bad about Facebook or LinkedIn or anybody else, but if I put it in there, it's theirs. If they ban me from it or stop me, then I don't have access to my material.
What a sign of the times, Maurice, that one of the main reasons you're coming back at us with now is legitimacy and honesty. Now, you wouldn't have been saying that 15 years ago, would you?
Well, I hope I would, but maybe not as strongly. So the website, for me, is my central truth. It's the way I see the world, and it's my material. And as much as I can, I control it, which means that I own it, so I can do what I want with it. And that's really important. And then from there, I feed out into the socials and bring people backwards and forwards. And I'm happy to be in all those spaces, but that's really why I have the website. It also allows me, of course, to promote my wares and my speaking and my consulting work and make sure that people are seeing what I'd love them to see about how I do it and what I do.
See, a bit of fun talking about germs of ideas, talking about robots that can apparently carry unborn children. Are you likely to go down the Humand, explain that if you would, the Humand avenue?
So that's a piece of my lexicon. It's language that I use. It's human and. It talks about, and I've had this for a very long time, extended it now with artificial intelligence, the reality that work doesn't get done by humans alone much anymore, that traditionally we use some sort of machinery. So we use calculators, we use abacuses, we used rocks, we use fulcrums. We always found something, a tool, you know, a screwdriver, a hammer. To me, that's a machine that would help us do our work better. And now the third part of that is artificial intelligence. So my question is increasingly to clients, audiences, and in my writing, when we're thinking about something, is it done by a human? Is it done by a tool, a piece of machinery? Or is it done by AI? Or more importantly, is it a combination of two or three of those? And it just lets us think about what needs to get done in a very different way. And it allows us to apportion tasks to these, you know, machines, humans, or artificial intelligence.
It's quite interesting, you know. Quite a long time ago, I know you probably still are, but we talked a lot about medical futures. And now you're talking about education futures. And everything seems to be coming into one. And we may be laughing about a robot that can do all these things. But there we are. There's your one-stop shop.
Yeah, absolutely. And still talking about education, talking about all kinds of stuff, but you're right. I mean, last couple of weeks, as I said, I tend to find that when a topic comes into my life, I get lots of conversations around that topic for a while and until it changes again. That's not me driving it. That's other people for some reason gravitating back to this.
All right, Morris, time to park the ride. Tell our listeners where they can find you online once again.
So it's morrisfuturist.com. Take you to the brand new website. I would love your comments. Tell me what's good and bad. Tell me what I should change.
Thanks very much, man. It's wonderful catching up with you again, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Morris Misolowski, all the way from